This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is The Breakfast Grill. When you think Langkawi, duty-free and beaches probably comes to mind almost immediately for many. But Langkawi was actually a sleepy backwater and transformation only started in 1986 when the then Prime Minister Tun Mahathir pushed forward a plan to turn this 99-island paradise into a major tourist destination. Now, 34 years later, we ask how far has Langkawi come and what is the new blueprint for development? To answer this, we have Dr. Hezri Anand, the CEO of Langkawi Development Authority, in the studio this morning. Welcome to the show. Now Langkawi Development Authority, or LADA, is a government statutory body. It even has its own Act of Parliament, the Lembaga Pembangunan Langkawi Act 1990. So the role of LADA is still to plan and coordinate the development projects with a focus on tourism? Has that changed?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. And thank you, Xiaoning, for bringing me to Taman Tun. It's been scorching hot in Langkawi past few days, so it's great to be here. Very cool and breezy this morning. The Langkawi Development Authority was established way back in 1990. So this year we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. And we are now, yes, you're right, we are now under the jurisdiction of the Prime Minister's Department, one of the 56 agencies under the PMD. So we are now in the midst of amending our Act so that we can be administratively, legally transferred from the Ministry of Finance to the Prime Minister's Department.
But does that change anything? Because now, coincidentally, the Member of Parliament for Langkawi, who is also our Prime Minister, is also your boss at LADA.
Well, it makes things easier, actually. Rather than reporting to two bosses, I report to only one. So in that case, it's not much of an issue. I think the link with the Ministry of Finance is still there because we have two co-chairmen. One is the Chief Minister of Kedah, Datuk Seri Utama Mukriz Mahathir, and the other is the Deputy Finance Minister, who's also from Kedah. But the link is through the board, I think.
Why was there the change required to move from MOF to PM's office, the jurisdiction?
I think for a long time, there's always been discussion because LADA, for perhaps in the first 20, 30 years of its establishment, has focused more on tourism. So and then the ambit of development expanded from just tourism to everything else under the sun almost. So it is only natural, I think, for it to be transferred to PMD now. Yeah.
And does it really matter that the MP of Langkawi is also, like I say, your boss? Is there this then necessary check and balance? Because, you know, MPs, they're supposed to care for the needs of the constituents. Mm-hmm. But yet he's also the Prime Minister. And then yet he's also the boss of LADA. Yeah, so yeah. Who's representing the people of Langkawi?
In the day-to-day running of Langkawi Development Authority, we report mainly to the Chief Secretary General of the government, which is heading the Prime Minister's Department. So it is only, whenever Tun Mahathir is in Langkawi and whenever there's a special request, then I have to go and see him. So I think that he does not interfere so much with the day-to-day running of the establishment, I think. So,
but does he bring the concerns of the local Langkawi people to you? I mean, is there a conflict then because he's Prime Minister? He's also MP?
So far, it's not that apparent as yet, because like I said, it's the development fund come through the government channel and the reporting for those funds actually goes to the government machinery rather than the Member of Parliament. But the channeling of concerns, of course, come through, he's hardly there because he's in KL, but of course there's ADUN, and there's also two ADUN members of the State Assembly, one for Air Hangat and one for Kuah. So we have very close interaction with these two. So these are more immediate, I think, interaction happening at that level.
And you've been appointed in April 2019 and you've been tasked to reform LADA itself, right? Because I think as recently as 2015, the Auditor General, they found a management of LADA Ecotourism, which is a subsidiary of LADA, unsatisfactory because there were financial losses and mismanagement. Now, have you put in place changes to prevent this from happening again within LADA? What check and balances or reform have you done since getting into office?
Well, there are two entities. Of course, one is LADA itself, a statutory body, and then we have a number of subsidiaries and
a few companies,
including the cable car company as well, which is doing very well. Of course, you know, just like any corporate establishment, there needs to be some very tough auditing measures being put in place. So I think we've been looking into that. And since I got in, I've also managed to convince the board of LADA to appoint independent board members for our subsidiaries. You know, so this will provide that check and balance. And this is also welcome with the new SSM Act a couple of years ago. So I think we're moving towards that direction in tightening up the loose ends when it comes to corporate governance.
And since you receive actually funding from the government, I think I look at the 2017 records, which is the last available I have. The government poured in over 100 million in that year alone. So if I do a back of envelope calculation, I would say that probably billions have been spent since the formation of LADA in 1990. Now, as a taxpayer, I would like to know whether that has been put to good use.
Well, you're right. If you put in everything on the paper, yes, billions have been spent on the development of Langkawi. I think one, the basic infrastructure has been established in Langkawi. We've got good road connection across the island. We have a functional jetty, and it's quite presentable. And we have an international airport that could cater for 4 million arrivals. You know, so I think the basics have been covered with the billions of funds that have been poured in. And if you look at the average household income per capita, from just 800 ringgit in 1980, now Langkawi is the richest district in the state of Kedah. So we are at about 6,000 ringgit per household now, compared to 5,000 in Kota Star, which is the richest district in Kedah.
But what about the creation of jobs for the Langkawi residents? Because yes, I would admit if you go to the island, you do see very nice, fancy 4 or 5 star hotels. But is this at the cost of the local Langkawi residents? Has the development taken place without including them?
Tourism is not an innocent business, It's not an innocent endeavour. So there's been dark side of tourism, if I may put it that way. And our problem is not underemployment, it's actually overemployment. Because, can easily find job, you can easily find something to do that will bring in cash. Kids are not too keen on going to school, for instance. So we are looking at, how to address this in our blueprint. So rather than, them not benefiting from the fruits of development or tourism received, I think they've been over-reliance on that to the extent of, compromising on their other well-being parameters.
And you mentioned this new development blueprint, right? Because that's going to be happening for 2021 to 2025, right? You've been entrusted to do that. What's going to be different this time under your watch? I mean, this so-called fifth wave of development for the Langkawi Islands.
Yes, we are at a very early stage of, formulating this blueprint. We are at least thinking of at least 6 trusts, development trusts that should, push Langkawi forward in the next few years. One is stronger emphasis on sustainable development or sustainability. Second is to encourage private sector investment. So FDI and, of course, domestic investment will be encouraged. And we also would like to diversify the experience of for tourists coming to Langkawi. So we've been looking at the higher end segment. How do we bring in these people? What kind of activities would be enticing for them to come to Langkawi? The other is to also empower local economy, and here we are looking at creative economy. For instance, what is the cultural DNA of Langkawi? So I've been looking at this seriously since I got in, and the folklore, the legends of Langkawi are not sufficiently, I think, promoted, and developed so that it can be presented to the international audience. So that's another pillar, number 4. The other is to enhance our international presence. Yeah, so digital marketing and all that. We have to put some money into that as well. And then, of course, with the shared prosperity vision, we will also have to look at the strengthening the social welfare of the people of Langkawi. So those are the six new areas, I think.
But you mentioned bringing in foreign investment, but the ironic thing is when I go to the LADA website, it's all in Malay. There's no English version.
We are in the midst of revamping that. There are a number of websites that we are running. One is Naturally Langkawi, which is it's in English. So this one is more governmental.
More
but we are in the midst of translating that. You see, in the past, we didn't encourage foreign investment that much. And hence, I think this, from this year onwards, it will be different. We'll be following trade missions abroad as well. Yeah.
Okay, and you also mentioned the shared prosperity vision, and part of that is inclusiveness. And also, there's a lot of buzzwords there. You know, so you've got like digital economy. That's another thing I see referred to in Langkawi. But, you know, what does it mean for them? I mean, other than being a testbed site for 5G implementation, how does it actually benefit the locals?
Yeah, that's a $5 million question. You know, how do we mainstream this or beyond the 6 months testing period? Yeah. So we are talking to the MCMC on the, what kind of business model would be good for the people of Langkawi, the businesses in Langkawi.
Yeah, what does it translate in terms of real applications?
Exactly. If I can give you one example, there is this 5G application, farming in a container. So a container is equivalent to 1 acre of space. And you can plant expensive vegetable like asparagus in there. And for each container, it will cost about 200,000 ringgit. But the return on investment is 14 months, you know. So if we can come up with sort of a number of containers for community projects. They can benefit very well from this sort of investment with the help from government. So we're looking at, how do you marry 5G technology with livelihood projects like that. So that's one opportunity that we're looking at in a big scale, perhaps.
So it's more than just a buzzword eventually.
We have to make it work for people. I think that's the bottom line here. You mentioned earlier about what is the benefit for the people of Langkawi. I mentioned, the average household income per capita has gone up. The other thing is, last year particularly, when I came in, the hoteliers were complaining to us that they're experiencing about 20% business drop. And we started looking at the data again, and we found out that the homestays are mushrooming. The homestays are actually run by the locals and not the luxury brands. So this is a positive development which may not be welcomed by the luxury brands in Langkawi.
But maybe better prosperity across the board for everybody then.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Dr. Hezri Anand, CEO of Langkawi Development Authority, or LADA. In a moment, we are going to discuss the all-important tourism sector. And can it be both inclusive and sustainable? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, this morning on the Breakfast Grill, we have Dr. Hezri Anand, CEO of Langkawi Development Authority, or LADA. Earlier, we were talking about the fifth wave of development for the island and what should the focus be. Now, earlier we established there is a need to diversify the economy from its reliance on tourism, but I think there's no denying how important it is, right? So let's spend some time on this, because visitors' arrivals have stagnated around maybe below 4 million. Last year, you said a record of what, 3.9 million?
3.92 million, yeah.
Yeah, but why can't we get above 4 million? What are the reasons for this? Why do we seem to rank behind the likes of, Phuket, Bali, for example? Why are we not the destination of choice?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we need more attractions. Of course, people are happy to go in cable car, which is good for us because that company
you
belongs
own that.
To LADA. Yes,
yeah.
So no complaint on that count. But I think one issue is connectivity. The other is retail experience. You know, these are the two big challenge in Langkawi. That's why we are coming up with a new project right in front of the airport, which is going to be a premium outlet there. But this is going to be a shopping in a forest kind of experience, because this is a very, very interesting natural spot. So, and then there's no clear cultural identity in Langkawi compared to Bali, for instance. You know, people will go there for kecak dance and a host of other issues, other cultural offerings. So in Langkawi, we're trying to develop that. And we're working very hard with the local leaders, try to boost up, for instance, GK. GK is a traditional theatre. Very well known in Langkawi in the past, but it's not promoted as a cultural product. So we're looking at this now, and so that we can compete with the other destination. But the disadvantage, perhaps in inverted comma, is we cannot be a rowdy place like Phuket, for instance. Langkawi, we have sort of specialized or decided to position ourselves as a family destination.
So, well, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I mean, there are people who want to actually have, I would say, a less rowdy vacation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, but I think over the years we have become so much of a retreat place rather than a tourist destination. So we are planning to come up with more events as well. So, for instance, in April, we're still trying to decide whether to go on or not because of the COVID-19. We are going to have the first ever Langkawi Festival to feature the cultural dimension of Langkawi. And so this is a placemaking, a branding strategy, hoping that this festival will grow to be like Georgetown Festival and also the Rainforest Festival. So the cultural dimension will be key in the forthcoming years for tourism.
The one thing I noticed about Malaysia, though, is that we are very good at coming up with plans. Mm. I think we are brilliant at that. But it's our consistency and quality, year in, year out, right?
Yeah.
You want events that people will come back to enjoy the experience. So we seem to keep changing our minds in terms of what we offer. Is that going to change, though?
Well, you see, there's a misconception that if we bring in events, we can bring in millions of people to the
which is maybe not what you want either.
Yeah,
right?
Not what we want, and it's not realistic as well. For instance, last year, we convened about 20 events. You would expect that, maybe you bring in about 1 million people just to attend those events. Apparently, it's only 20,000 people.
So it's maybe not worth the money spent.
Well, it's important, but you have to be well targeted. For instance, if we focus on cultural festival, then you can really brand it and it can grow. So rather than having 20 events, you might focus it into maybe 10, but very good ones.
And well run. Year in, year out.
And it's consistent. People can expect every year.
What about the natural spots of Langkawi, of which there are many? And one of them I want to bring out is the Langkawi Geopark, right?
Yes, yes.
So what's happening on that front with regards to the UNESCO status? Because that was up for review in 2019.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. We had two evaluators coming from Ireland and also Iceland in August last year. So the unofficial results is out. We have been given green card. That means that we can continue being a UNESCO Global Geopark for another 4 years. But the official announcement will be made in April. Yes, people come to Langkawi mainly for its natural beauty. If you look at the attractions, the four top attractions in Langkawi, number one is Cable Car. Cable Car is basically the Machin Chang Formation, which is a geosite. Number two is the Underwater World, the aquarium finds. So Cable Car is about 1.2 million people. The Underwater World, about 400,000 people. Number three, number four, number five are all eco spots or natural spots. Kilim, Geoforest Park. Tanjung Ru and also Tasik Dayang Bunting. These are all eco destinations.
But are we doing enough to protect them? Because I did read this report, right, Achieving Sustainable Coastal Environment in Langkawi, which admittedly was published in 2017 by the Borneo Journal of Marine Science and Aquaculture. And one of their points is that perhaps the Langkawi government is not doing enough because the coastal environment has deteriorated, right, from a lack of effective governance and also rapid development, which has seen, human waste discharge. So are we doing enough to protect all these beautiful natural sites within Langkawi, which, if you ask me, is the best form of promotion itself of the island?
Yes. In short, we're not doing enough, I think, in the past. Chenang, Pantai Chenang is the most, well-known spot to Langkawi. We have been experiencing episodes of pollution in the past because these most of the development over there were developed. They're not very well planned, So
it looks quite, I would say, honestly, quite messy.
Yes, because that was not the government plan. It's just sprouted. The capital was put in, and Chenang became what Chenang is without much planning. The initial idea was to develop Pantai Kok to be a tourist spot. The other concern that we have in a big way, rather, is the cleanliness in Langkawi. The litter bugs are plenty in Langkawi. So we're doing our best to increase our efforts in making sure that the cleanliness is at a global level. And we're also bringing in private sector players. Just for instance, we want to collect the plastic bottles in Langkawi. We want to create a demand, market demand for people to sell it to this particular player.
So you think you found the model to balance the delicate balance between growth, environment and sustainability then?
Well, That is the key word, really. The sustainability is the key word. And, you know, we have to ensure that the main attraction, which is, the natural beauty of Langkawi, is protected. It will take some time. It's not going to be overnight, but I think we're moving towards that direction.
Okay, and I have to ask about whether the COVID-19 derails your plans, for Langkawi, because it so happens this year is also Visit Malaysia Year. We've got lofty target of 30 million arrivals for the country, and I think 5 million for Langkawi Island itself. Yeah. So what remedial actions are you planning for, especially when you think 60% of the local Langkawi economy is driven by tourism?
Yes.
Won't you be affected?
We are affected in some ways. In fact, we were riding very high, and end of last year, it was, like you mentioned, it's 3.92 million is the new record for tourist arrival in Langkawi.
Of which half are foreigners, right?
Half are foreigners. And then even in January, we're still riding high. Before COVID-19, the hotel was still fully booked and all that. And suddenly it happened. And of course, we've heard of cancellations in worth hundreds of thousands of ringgit for some of the main hotels in Langkawi. So on the 19th, we're going to have a big meeting involving the industrial players to see how we can, what kind of targeted efforts can be done, because it looks like it's going to overflow to March and even April. I mean, the slowdown, if not more. One immediate action that we've done is to have a domestic promotion. Langkawi, it's like a mini Langkawi Mata, something like to that effect. And so that we can boost domestic landing in Langkawi in the next few months.
But do you think locals will even travel? I mean, like, I have my reservations whether I want to go anywhere. Even the, for example, like malls in KL have gotten quite quiet.
Yeah. Social media is not helping. In fact, we are still having fun in the sun, jet skiing and all that. But people have been asking me, is it safe to come to Langkawi? Because there are so many Chinese tourists going there. I think we have to be vigilant. But at the same time, I think we are there's a bit of, too much concern
about. We'll have to ride it out for the moment. Yeah. Is there the possibility then that some of the hotels might start cutting jobs, and that will have a negative impact on the local residents?
If you look back at the SARS episode, that was really bad. If it overflows to more than 6 months, it's not unlikely that will happen. And it's also some of the banks, some of the hotels are also serving bank loans, So it's a systemic effect if not well handled.
And I just want to end with this question. What else do you think the federal government can do to help Langkawi achieve its status as a world-class tourist destination? You've got the funding, you've got the tax-free status. What will complete the jigsaw?
The tax-free status is not fully capitalized yet, I think. For instance, for the luxury segment, I think we're doing a study on the possibilities, what are the further possibilities of the tax duty-free status. And, you can even have a luxury. There are so many supercars in Langkawi because it's duty-free, but they cannot be re-exported. If we can relax the tax system or the tax standard operating procedures, we can re-export them, and this can attract the rich and famous to come to Langkawi to view the cars and then, bring it back to their own country.
But what about for the local Langkawi residents, though? That's the other question. How can they be included in Langkawi actually becoming a major tourist destination?
Well, if you look at the pattern in the past few decades, they've been very adapt at
finding new ways
and also to participate in the economy. But we are going to have more targeted efforts to bring them further into the new economy that we're developing.
On that note, thank you for your time today, Dr. Hezri, for giving us a glimpse into Langkawi's future. I'm Wong Xiaoning for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you, Xiaoning.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.